good evening. I'm Alyssa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. With the tabling of Budget 2023 just around the corner on Friday, October 7th, will we see the public healthcare sector be prioritized? Will we see allocations move towards the recommended 5% of GDP from the current 2.1%, a step in the right direction towards reversing some of the repercussions of decades of underinvestment in this sector? Now, with the generational endgame for smoking and also the white paper on health, will this mark the beginning of reforms for the Malaysian healthcare system? Joining me on the show to discuss all of this and much more, I have Azrul Mohd Khalib. He is the chief executive of the Gallen Center for Health and Social Policy, which is a healthcare policy research outfit, research and advocacy outfit. Azrul, thank you so much for joining me today. So the Gallen Center has put out its wish list, if I may, for Budget 2023. Healthcare financing was number one, was one of the main points. And I wanted to begin our conversation today on that note. Can you explain the ways in which you're hoping healthcare financing in Malaysia is addressed?
Well, Melissa, first of all, we have to accept the reality that the healthcare financing for Malaysia is no longer sustainable. A model that was worked out in the mid-80s and still being used today is not fit for purpose and not future-proof to be able to deal with the challenges that the Malaysian population is going to be facing or is already facing in the next decade or so. Look at some of the challenges that have been highlighted. I think non-communicable diseases has been very high on the agenda with ETs, cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, cancer. We have the issue of mental health, which has been neglected for many, many, many years and now is being placed as a priority, especially in the so-called post-COVID crisis period. And most importantly is the aged population, the priority which the discussion has been centered around over the past several months in the realization that Malaysia is not prepared to deal with the consequences of a population that is growing increasingly older due to a better healthcare system. So, find all these factors all together, you find that it is impossible for Malaysia to continuously depend on a tax-based financing system, which is what we have today, which is where people essentially are paying income tax to the government, of course, that revenue is derived and spread out to different items in the federal budget, including healthcare. So today is that 98% of healthcare costs in the country are done by this very small pool of money. And when you look at it in general, you find that in order for us to be able to meet the challenges of MCDs, mental health, aging population, and future pandemics such as COVID-19, we need to be sure that we're able to sustainably have that money continue on in the years to come. So this is not just about the 2023 budget, Melissa. It's also about for the next 10 years, how are we going to be looking at financing? So we have made it a priority because the Auditor General's report from several years ago, you may remember, declared that Malaysia's healthcare system was underinvested, overburdened, and ill-prepared to be able to deal with the capacity in terms of what is expected to do. So at the root of it, at the heart of this matter, is really the issue of how we finance healthcare. So essentially, we're not even 5% of GDP. That's 100% of what we already have as allocation for health right now. And the money just isn't there, Melissa. About 32 billion times 2, 64 billion. Where is the money going to come from? And already, health is the, depending on which year, it's the second or largest budget item in the federal budget. So this is why we have made a priority to look at healthcare financing and to look at a sustainable model for it in the future.
Okay, I do want to get into potential sustainable models for healthcare financing, but I want to touch on something that has made a lot of has garnered a lot of headlines. The fact that the Galen Center is recommending that the government remove the 1 ringgit and 5 ringgit charge for outpatient and specialist care at the Ministry of Health facilities. That is a controversial statement, if I may. It's garnered a lot of mixed reactions to it. First of all, I want to understand better why do you say it feels a bit counterproductive to me to remove what is seen to be helping a lot of people, particularly in the lower income groups. Can you help me understand why you came to this recommendation?
Well, here's the thing, Lisa. It's not helping people. And it is actually enforcing the idea. And then it gets subsidized medication and treatment through the public health. The thinking is that somehow it's cheaper in the public sector. But we know from a health economics point of view that care is the same pretty much throughout the ecosystem. It's just how much subsidy goes into the payment or the treatment that we receive. So it is a little bit of an illusion to think that public healthcare is cheaper. It's somebody's paying for that bill, and that is taxpayers. So we feel that it is no longer necessary to have 1 ringgit and 5 ringgit payments at the front desk for people to access outpatient and specialist care in the public healthcare system, because there's no point in charging that amount, because it's not contributing much to cost recovery, because it's still 98% of healthcare in public sector is subsidized. So this 1 ringgit, 5 ringgit model is just creating this illusion and maintaining the conception. So I would argue that you don't need to pay anything when you go and register at the outpatient and specialist care. So I don't think anybody's going to complain about not being charged anything at, you know. So we have suggested instead for people at co-pay mechanisms for treatment. So rather than focus on the 1 ringgit and 5 ringgit, let's face that if we wanted to increase the payment for that 1 ringgit, 5 ringgit, if you increase from 1 ringgit to 100% increase, if you increase from 5 ringgit to 10 ringgit, that's also 100% increase. So get rid of it altogether and focus instead on ensuring that people share in terms of the subsidies that go for treatment. So medication is subsidized the way it is right now. And for example, for people with diabetes today, it's fully subsidized by the government. We argue that perhaps this is something that could be partly borne by the patient, so that when they receive insulin from government pharmacies, they are able to also contribute to paying part of that cost and not currently at no charge, which is the current situation today. So co-pay, sharing that burden helps a lot better in terms of also appreciating the level of subsidization and the financing that goes into healthcare. So you take charge of your own health as well, because at the end of the day, if you are expected to also pay for your care, then you are going to logically feel that you have more concern about your care. So that's how the theory.
Azra, but wouldn't it also be a unintended consequence that, particularly for those who may struggle to pay, you know, the lower income bracket, who think that may struggle to pay their medical bills, wouldn't that just stop them from seeking help, stop them from seeking early diagnosis, stop them from going until it's very, very late in the disease or illness? Wouldn't that be a deterrent for many to seek medical attention?
All those probably need to be able to shift the kind of thinking that a complacent and basically less responsibility for our own healthcare to one that is much more educated and informed about wanting to participate in taking care of their own health. And right now, the main issue isn't so much as affordability as in health literacy. People are not literate enough in terms of health to be able to make the kind of decisions and to also invest in their own health. That's why When you insurance, for example, it's very low in this country. And so what we have right now is our conversations concerning healthcare for the past few decades. It's been too hampered and restricted by the issues of affordability. Mm. The bigger issues are really concerning you understand why they need to be taking charge of their own health and ensuring that they are healthy, for you to be able to maintain and take care of your health, to be able to get insulin, and most importantly, to take that insulin, because we also have problems concerning treatment compliance and adherence. And that's not linked back to affordability issue. That's concerning how they understand about health and healthcare. So I think if we get rid of it, we will be able to address the issue concerning healthcare financing in a much more constructive and most importantly, one that is able to prepare us for the future. So let's not have this $1, $5 issue anymore and concentrate on how can we introduce social health insurance.
Okay, I do want to delve a bit deeper into this social health insurance, which I think is quite interesting. But we're going to go for a quick break now. Let's come back and continue our conversation with Azra Muhammad Khalid from the Gallen Center of Health and Social Policy. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm speaking tonight to the Chief Executive of the Gallen Center for Health and Social Policy, Azra Muhammad Khalid. Azra, let's come back to the issue of healthcare financing. You broke it down for us, the need for a sustainable model. And one of the ways, one of those models that's been proposed is the idea of social insurance. Can you break it down for us? What is a vision of social insurance for healthcare for Malaysia?
Well, social health insurance in Malaysia is going to be a hybrid model of what we see in other countries, like in the UK, in Indonesia, in Taiwan, Korea, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, many of countries which have already gone down this path. So with social health insurance, we are going to be able to plan multiple years ahead. So if we can talk about 5-year, 10-year plans, how it would look like would be for individuals who are part of the workforce contributing the way that we're contributing right now to SOCSO, EPF, to a common pool of funds, which will go and be earmarked specifically for the purposes of healthcare costs. And that includes treatment for us to be able to get the best experts to invest in infrastructure and so forth. So what we're looking at in the way that you already have on your payroll, that you have a SOCSO and EPF, we will now I would want to propose that it will be in the same way that we do for these mechanisms, to have both and the employer to contribute to this. So the idea being that when we have more people contributing to this pool, we're able to also, we'll be able to collect this money to be able to then invest into developing healthcare. And this would not replace the existing allocation that the government already provides under the federal budget. It would implement. So if today we talk about $32 billion that we're able to get from the federal government, perhaps in the future, when we have social health insurance, we could have allocation to be complemented by the amount of money that could be obtained through this health insurance scheme.
I understand what you're trying to say about healthcare being dependent on the on how much money taxpayers have, the allocation from federal government, and that's not sustainable. I understand that, but if with a social health insurance model, tapping into the workforce, wouldn't taxpayers be paying twice? Once in terms of tax to the federal government, and another in terms in contributions to social health insurance. I'm wondering about the people who are not within the workforce, will they also be covered by insurance? Will what does that mean? Again, we know in Malaysia there's only a small margin of people pay taxes. There's a huge portion that are untaxed.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
This is a good point. Very good point, Melissa, because when we look at who pays tax, in this country where we have around 13 to 14 workers, we have only around 2.4 million people who are paying tax. The majority of the workforce don't pay tax anyway. And this is a problem in itself. So what's important here is that people, again, take charge and participate and invest in healthcare. So I would say that though it is a form of payroll tax, I would say this is also a way for employees to be able to participate in investing in healthcare. And most importantly here, and this is going back to that point you raised just now, those who are not working, who are not employed, who are or in retirement, who are not yet in the workforce and so forth, which is solidarity. Those who can afford to be able to pay into the system, be able to utilize that funding to help those who are not yet be able to contribute into the wider pool of funds. And just to show you that there is a lot of misconceptions concerning where social health insurance support is. A lot of people have the mistaken belief that there is no real support for social health insurance in Malaysia, but the opposite is actually true. When Code Blue put out a poll recently to look at where people, Malaysians especially, look at the issue of whether or not they support new mandatory national health insurance program, which is funded by payroll contributions from employers and employees in the same way that we do EPFO. That poll, that more than 70% actually support that particular idea. And the reason why is because when you look in other countries, developed countries, they pay a huge amount of tax. In those countries, they pay around 30-40% tax. Education is free. Healthcare is all covered under that tax. But in Malaysia, we don't have much tax either, and there are not that many people. So this is the way forward, that we can actually make use of Malaysians who are interested and concerned about their fellow Malaysians in wanting to help. And this is one way to move forward, because essentially we look at a system that is unable to be sustained based on existing contributions to the tax. And honestly, when you look at other countries like Indonesia started using social health insurance, I think there's a very good chance that when Malaysia adopts such a system, we are going to see very positive results. And many of the issues that we've been scratching our heads over the past decade can at least be shown a pathway for resolution. Today, we are just circling around the same problem, and right, we are going back again and again, and we are not finding any. So, we should be able to adopt social health insurance.
Well, that clearly there's frustration about, a lack of solutions, a lack of reform. I do wonder if this is the time to seize the potential for reform within the healthcare system. We have the health white paper in the periphery. Is there appetite for reform? Is this going to be part of the health white paper? What do you know so far about it, Azrul?
Well, to be honest, Melissa, when you look at health, when you look at reform in general, there is never a good time for reform. So at the end of the day, we actually have to take advantage of the COVID-19 crisis, which has demonstrated, highlighted, and underlined the vulnerabilities, flaws, and weaknesses of our healthcare system as it is today. When you look at reform, it's going to be a difficult pathway. It's not going to be easy, Lisa. I can tell you that when you look at other countries, reform takes maybe 10 to 15 years. And when you look at the health white paper, which the health minister has been championing over the past half year or so, it is in itself setting out a blueprint for health reform. That's not just next year or the next couple of years. It's up to 15 years, which is the equivalent of Sri Rancang, so Malaysian Development Plan. So it is an ambitious way forward, and it's taking into consideration many views from different stakeholders, the findings from previous reform papers, recommendations, and also updating it after COVID-19. But I can tell you again, Melissa, that without political will, reform is not likely to happen, because everybody hates any idea of there being change to the current status quo. And the fact of the matter is that without public support also, that reform cannot happen. And unfortunately, when it comes to health, we have seen Malaysians generally have been very complacent, taken for granted the status of healthcare that we have in this country at the moment. The question is, are we prepared for the next one, right? The next pandemic, the issues concerning aged care, mental health, and so forth. And the answer to that, based on what we understand the status of them right now, is that we are not prepared. If we continue to allow it to be business as usual, things must change, reform must happen in the healthcare system.
Well, you know, you're right about the fact that Malaysia's never short of great ideas. We have lots of great ideas, lots of blueprints and plans, and you know 5-year plans, 10-year plans, 15-year plans. Is there, so the question is the implementation of this. If it's going to be a long-term plan and reform will take a while for it to happen incrementally, what then of the way Malaysia is run? The idea that any kind of political instability or uncertainty or change in government scuppers all good intentions and plans. Is there a way to ensure that the health white paper survives any kind of change in government or political uncertainty?
Well, this is the key point here, is how do we ensure that whatever reform, whatever recommendation or disruption that stands for the benefit of Malaysians' health in general is able to be retained, sustained, and made permanent. And the reality here is that it depends on leadership. If we have leadership at the very top that is committed, it is able to invest, importantly, to be courageous enough to be unpopular, then we're going to be able to ensure many of the hard reforms, tough choices, tough decisions that need to be made is able to be The problem right now is that whenever there is change in the political structure, or there is less commitment to issues concerning health, then you see there being hiccups, the reluctance, and foot dragging in the way many of the reforms that have been proposed in place. And I think a very good example of that is what's been happening to the tobacco bill, which is a very interesting, very visionary, very bold, audacious game changer in a form of legislation. But you can see there how much reluctance we have in the policy, the legislators, in wanting to pass that, because there are concerns, enforcement regarding whether it's appropriate. Most importantly, the breakdown of trust that has widened, I think, in terms of how the public issues concerning public health. And I think, to it, we also need to do a better job at ensuring that people trust us to be able to make the decisions that would benefit them. It's no longer 1970s, 80s, where it's a paternalistic approach to health and governance, where, you know, you elect the government and then the government will do whatever they want to do, and you treat them like a father figure or mother figure. It's, those days are gone. The public want to be more involved. They want to be taken seriously. They want to be heard. And this is where the current way of governance, the policy making, decision making, needs to catch up with that as well, and to include people's voices and their concerns when they're putting up legislation such as this. So even when it's good for them, it's like medicine. You know, it's bitter, it sucks, we hate it, but we have to take it down. And these tough measures sometimes is going to need to be done, and sometimes it will take several years before we actually see the benefit of whatever we implement today.
Yes, amen to no more paternalistic authoritarianism, for sure.
Yes.
Azrul, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate your time. That was Azrul Mohamad Khalib of the Gehlen Center, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night. Thank you.